Hi everyone, this is Dave Charest, Content Manager here at Constant Contact, and welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Marketing Roundtable. Although it's oval today in the office that we're in, so it's a marketing oval table. happy Friday, hope you've had a wonderful week, and I'm once again joined by my esteemed colleagues who are joining me in some lovely malt beverages, and I have with me Mr. Mendelson.
Hi, I'm Josh Mendelson. I work in product marketing here at Constant Contact, and today I am drinking a Dogfish Head 90-minute IPA.
I'm Danielle Cormier, and I am a social media specialist here at Constant Contact, and I'm drinking an Angry Orchard Cider.
Ooh, yeah, very nice.
I'm Dave Gerhardt. I work on the marketing communications team here, and I'm actually drinking a Harpoon Summer myself.
Very nice.
Thank you.
And yes, once again, I'm Dave Charest, and I'm watching my figure. No. So today we wanted to talk about a few things. One of those to hit the news is Twitter recently announced that they're actually putting in their settings a do not track option. For those of you who don't know what that means, is basically websites, when you go to them, they install some type of cookie on your computer that kind of tracks your activity on that website and beyond in some cases, I believe, so that they can serve up recommendations to you and kind of take what your activity is and kind of say, okay, this person would be most interested in this. And they've actually added an option, and I believe they're the first site to do this, so I think it's kind of a bold move to say, you know what, if you don't want to be tracked, you just click that option and you'll be all set. What do we think about this?
Well, I think it's really interesting, and I'll be curious to see how much use it gets. Because, you know, even with all the Facebook privacy setting stuff and you know, Google tracking, and people get all freaked out, and then they keep using the platforms. Mm-hmm. So it'll be really interesting. I mean, personally, you know, I don't really have anything to hide, so I'm...
Really?
I don't know why anyone wouldn't want a more personalized experience.
Experience. If you're going to recommend things to me that I might like, I can always choose to tune it out, but I think it's a really good thing. I mean, the only, you know, I understand there are certain people who don't want whatever sketchy thing they're doing tracked, Dave Gerhardt. but, you know, for most of us, I think that there is there's tons of value in recommended content.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think what the interesting is, I'll take another one of these, is that somebody just ran out to get us some more beer. So I think one of the interesting things is, though, is that, I mean, it's not so much like, yes, I think you want a more personalized experience, but I think it boils down to what they actually do with that information. And, yeah. And I think it becomes about, like, selling it to advertisers. That's the kind of freaky thing.
And
right?
that's what the big concern with Facebook was... You know, they have personal information on 901 million people. And, you know, as a web browser, I want a personalized experience.
Yeah.
I don't think too much about what they're doing with my data, but I think when you kind of shine a light on it, you know, it does bring up a concern. But I don't know. I think we'll have to see as more, you know, more of this privacy stuff kind of comes to light. I don't think it's affected me in a personal way yet, so
right.
You know, I don't really have a...
I mean, do you guys think it's a PR move as much as anything?
Yes. They just want to look like the nice guys and that they're doing everyone a favor.
But is that necessarily bad? Well, I think as a whole, Twitter as a brand appeals more to, like, that the early adopter type crowd, so I think it's kind of a, you know, a move on that end to kind of say, like, hey, you know, we're you know, nipping this in the butt before it becomes an issue.
But I think to Danielle's point, or Josh's point too, is that, I mean, isn't that kind of what you want to do? I mean, right? Like, your users or your people are, or your audience is telling themselves stories, right? And if they're identifying a story that resonates with a particular group of people that they don't want to be tracked and they don't want to, and they're connecting to that story by saying, look, if you don't want that, we're, like, that's not what Twitter is about. It's not about us advertising to you. It's about you using the platform. Now, granted, I don't know how Twitter is really planning to make any money, and I don't even know if they are yet these days. Are they still not making any money, or I don't know what
they're really
doing? They're making
more
some progress.
Ads than
yeah.
before, but
no,
it's
but
not that easy to turn it off either.
Oh.
If you use Chrome, you have to download an app, and if you use Firefox,
you have to download an app to do it?
Yeah, it's an extension for the browser.
Well,
okay.
Point, they, at least they give you the option, though. Facebook doesn't give you the option, and they can track your information even if you're not logged into Facebook, so I think... You know, it's just it's interesting to see that they made this stance. It's just such an opposite stance from Facebook.
But I think, you know, it's kind of like this unspoken contract that I feel like I have with all of these free platforms is that, you know, you don't get something for nothing.
Right.
I mean, I'm willing to give some information about myself away to A, have a better experience, and B, to use this platform for free. And as a marketer, like, thank God.
Thank God.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, I feel that at least Facebook is moving in the right direction in terms of, and I keep saying this, in terms of like sponsored stories and things like that. And the only way they are really going to be able to serve up those types of things is by tracking your likes, tracking those types of things that you do on the platform. So, I don't know, it's one of those kind of catch-22s almost, but if you don't like it, don't use it. I guess it's the final call to action on that, right? So speaking about Facebook, the other thing that happened recently was that we had two new Facebook apps come out. One is the Facebook Page Manager for all of you page admins out there, which is actually pretty cool, and the Facebook Camera app. So both of these are for, is it only for iPhone or is it on Android as well?
Yeah, it's only for iPhone.
So it's only for iPhone right now. So maybe, Danielle, you can tell us a little bit about both of these apps. That would be great.
Okay. The new Facebook app is for the pages is really great because it's just easy access directly to your Facebook page that you're managing. Before, you could access it only if you were an admin for one page, which is tricky, and you also had a pretty hard time uploading photos to your business page as well.
Yeah.
But now you can have multiple pages and switch between all of them. You can check out the insights. You can upload photos. It's just a definitely easy access right to your page.
Yeah, I think that definitely makes things like cooler for page admins who actually have like a Facebook place page or like things where you're at a location and you're out at events and you're doing these things that now you can actually, it just does make that whole process easier to upload photos directly to your page or
As a small business owner, they don't have time, so they have their phone in their pocket. They can whip it out at an event or with a customer trying a product and then just upload it directly.
Yep.
I mean, I think the other thing I like about it is it's a very clear distinction. You know, it's I've got an app for my personal use. I've got an app for my business use. And I think, you know, when you struggle to separate those two, any tool that can help you only do one or the other.
Yeah.
For me personally, like that's sort of a win. You know, it makes it a little bit easier to get me directly to what I want to do in that moment without getting myself confused.
Yeah. Well, to play devil's advocate though, just in terms of like apps in general, like I mean, what Facebook has the main Facebook app, but then they came out with the Messenger app, and then they came out with these two new apps, and it's like, what the hell? Like, how many apps do I need to work Facebook? You know, like I almost feel like the Messenger one is actually completely pointless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like, do I really want to be jumping in between like all these apps all the time to just use Facebook? I mean, I don't know. I guess it does make sense for the pages just because there's not a better solution to managing your page and managing your personal account right now. But I don't know. I feel like the camera could probably be integrated.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The camera with the regular app probably, but you don't have to worry about accidentally posting a personal status on your business page or if you're a little bit bigger of a company that has multiple people accessing your Facebook page, then you don't have to worry that one of them will accidentally post something.
But does the camera app, can you post from the camera app to pages?
No.
So
it's just your personal.
So it's just your personal account, right?
Right, yeah.
But yeah,
you can post photos like you could before for the...
It'll be interesting to see if they... Because what's interesting, I guess, about the Photos app, too, is that, one, you have a feed of just photos from your friends and the people you're connected with. But the app itself actually contains some filters and things like that, like our friend's Instagram, where you can kind of make your photos look cooler. So I'm doing a lot of talking with my hands today. If you could only see
it's
this.
Great for podcasts.
Yeah, it's really good.
Good.
You should see the enthusiasm in which I'm speaking with you today. So it's interesting in that sense what will end up happening with it.
Yeah, I think what they're trying to do is continue to encourage people to use rich media on Facebook. And, you know, I think obviously the long-term plan, Instagram's a huge part of that, but I'm guessing this was already developed. I mean, that deal's not even done. I'm not sure I see a ton of use for the Facebook camera app. I just used it for the first time while we were talking. I know, I'm way behind the curve. But I do think that they understand, the thing that I take is very encouraging is they understand that the mobile experience is less than optimal, mm-hmm. and they're taking steps to make it better.
Well, I think that's a good point. I think that's why they kind of, so there's a separate app for Messenger, there's a separate app for camera now. So they have kind of taken the app and broken it out into different pieces that you might use. Because
honestly, regardless of all these things, I just wish they would work out the share issue with
The thing that's frustrating.
That's the frustrating thing.
Well, it's because the Twitter functionality is built into your iPhone, but you can't take a picture and share it to Facebook.
You
can't
even share someone else's post, though.
But yeah, that's what I'm more concerned with, is that if I'm in the Facebook app and I look at somebody's photo and I want to share it, I can't. I have to save it to my phone and then share it from there. And then that, like, it defeats the whole purpose of what social media is about to me, I think.
I think the best part about the camera app is you can upload multiple photos, because before you could only do a single photo, and that was a pain.
Yep. Cool. We have a listener question, and let's see if we can get into this here. So the question comes in, and it says, I'm on the right track with my newsletter, but how do I get more people to open it to begin with? Right now I'm finding that only about half of the people open it. Anyone want to jump in here? Dave?
I think... Well, first of all, half is great.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, so if we're looking at, like, half, actually, yeah. Let's put that in perspective.
So, the standard, you know, open rate that, you know, we often talk about...
Is upwards
of 30%.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, even 20%, I mean, is the average.
Yeah, 30 is, like really good.
30 is, I think the industry average is something in the 20s, right? But I think, you know... It has to be, for me, you know, as a consumer, the emails that actually work are the ones that really get right to the point. Mm-hmm. You know, they're super concise, but then they also find a way to be a little bit witty at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, you get an email that says, like, 10 marketing charts that you need to read now. Mm-hmm. I know what's going to be in the email, and I know that there's probably some kind of, you know, urgency to open that up. So... Mm-hmm. I think, you know, targeted subject lines is a great one, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's easy to do, right? It's, you know, 50 characters, no more, and then just producing content that's really relevant to your readers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, there's a couple other things that are really important, too, which is, you know, make sure you're figuring out who your from line is. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if you're using a service provider like Constant Contact or another product, you can adjust what it says in that subject line, and you want to make sure it's something that's recognizable to people. Otherwise, they may dismiss it out of hand, even if they want your content. So I think, you know, subject line, like Dave talked about, really important. Who it's from, really important.
Right. And if you don't delete that out, it's going to show up as, I don't know what the standard text is, but it doesn't have to be from you. It can just be from your business name.
Right.
But there's data that says people are, you know, you're more likely to open an email when it's a person sending it on the other side.
Yeah, you just need to recognize who it's from. I mean, this boils down to three things, right? And we've kind of talked about them. But it's relationship, relevancy, and curiosity, right? So the number one reason people are going to open your email or open up email in general is because they know who it's coming from. So you have to really make sure that people recognize that. So if they've signed up, like, for your business, you don't want it to come from Joe Schmo, and then, like, they're not going to make that connection, you know? Or vice versa, if they signed up for Joe Schmo, you want it to come from Joe Schmo and not, like, another business type of thing. So you really need to kind of keep... like a one-track mind almost, is the keeping that recognizable factor involved there. So it really boils down to that relationship you have with people.
I think having a really clear call to action is an underrated thing. It seems like it gets talked about a lot, but when you think about people that actually do it,
mm-hmm.
so not only having a clear call to action, but making sure that maps to what's actually in the email, because that's one of the worst things is to, you know, overpromise and overhype in your subject line. Somebody opens it up and it's nothing.
Yeah. And the next thing, and Dave kind of talked about that a little bit, was the relevancy, right? Like, not everyone's going to open your email, and that's okay, because not everything you send is going to be relevant to everyone. It's where your people are at a certain time. So you may be talking about one thing that somebody might not at that time find that they're compelled to read or open up to find out more about. But somebody else, you might hit them at the right time, and that's great. So it's about being relevant. And then, and of course, you know, we talk about the subject lines and then kind of writing in a way that makes people curious about, like, feel like they have to open up to find out what's going on inside the email. That's another important aspect of it.
So what if we had to maybe take one or two tips, what do you think we should say?
I think a short, compelling subject line is probably your biggest key to success. Mm-hmm. And then I'd say also, you know, and you sort of touched on this a little bit, is, you know, think about your content and who it's for, and also how user-friendly it is. So, you know, so many people are reading email on their mobile devices.
Yep.
So think about, you know, formatting your template in a single column and not writing too much.
Yep.
I think sometimes you get email newsletters, and even if you open them, you don't actually read them because there's so much stuff there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so much, and I, you know, even for things I want to read, I don't have the time.
Right. Yeah.
I agree.
I think it all starts with, you know, building a good list and having multiple lists that you did a good job of segmenting. You know, if you have a big list and you're blasting everybody the same content, your open rates, people aren't going to open it. But if you do a good job, you know, scrubbing your list and getting really good information from people, you're going to have a better chance of getting more people to open your emails.
Yeah. There are probably two things I want to add to that. And one, my biggest tip is I would say, focus on that relationship. I think that's the most important thing. Right, because if you're, let's say you're on social media and you're on Twitter or you're on Facebook and you're talking with people and, like, you know, you're helping them with things and you have this engaging relationship with them, and, you know, you say, hey, you know, if you find this stuff useful, you should really check out my email newsletter because I do more stuff like that there. And then, like, oh, you know, I will. And then, so they have that connection with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you end up in their inbox, it's kind of like they've invited you kind of to their house or something. It's like a you know, it's not out in the open. It's kind of like a sacred zone, right? That if they've had that connection with you and that experience with you, then that's going to make it more likely that they're going to use that thing. The second thing is, just to throw this out there, is that an open rate isn't necessarily always the best statistic to look at either.
Right.
Just because there are so many factors that play in where somebody could be opening your email, and depending on where they're reading it or how they have their settings set up, what happens is when somebody opens an email, in order to register as an open, kind of invisible image pops up, and that's what counts as an open. And if they have images turned off, or they're looking at it on a BlackBerry or a smartphone that doesn't have images turned on, they may actually look at and read your own. look, I see everyone smirking. they may actually look at your email, but you don't see that register as an open. So that's not necessarily always the best indicator. One of the ways to really see how well people are engaging with your content is to ask them to take some type of action in the email and actually have them click a link or do something or reply to you even. Just hit reply and let me know what you think. Then you can really see what's going on, because that's actually something that you can track that has, like, a hard statistic behind it. Anybody else want to add anything to that, or are we good?
I think we've beat it to death.
I think you've...
If you can have your people to open your email list, you're doing...
Yeah, you're doing a really great job. I think that's what it boils down to. But if you're looking to get 100%, hopefully these tips will help you out. So that's about all we have for today. So let's leave everybody with a tip from Danielle. What do you got for us this week, Danielle?
All right, today's tip is, don't forget to announce your Facebook page through your email marketing. Email marketing and social media work great together. Don't be afraid to use your existing database of email contacts to build your fan base on Facebook. If you're a Constant Contact customer, there are even a few templates designed specifically to help you promote your Facebook page.
Awesome. Thanks, Danielle. And thanks to everyone listening today, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye now.